comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all over this beautiful planet we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. We had another Best of Kevin last night. Every time we do a Best of Kevin and it's not on the night when people are expecting that it's going to be, or there's two in a week, even if I explain it later, still I get a lot of email about it. Look, we've been having some wild, wild weather. I don't know about your part of the world and what your weather is like right there, right now, but we've been having some really wild weather. It's been unreal. It's been an unreal, wild ride. And when you're having that, and when you know you're going to have that, or at least that's what they're predicting, and you got every reason to think that's going to happen, you go outside and look, and yeah, it's on the way. You can see it. I got two choices there. I can go live and I can be right in the middle of trying to get some information to you and then bang, no electricity. Well, when there's no electricity, there's no broadcast, right? And we're right in the middle of me trying to get some information to you. And the only way I can get that information to you then is to go on the air and do that same show again and just complete it. Or I can do a Best of Kevin, because that's information that you've already heard, and it's information, if the electricity goes out and the broadcast goes down, then no problem. You just, it's something you've already been exposed to. But I try to pick something that, even though you've been exposed to it, was very, very interesting for you. And I hope you enjoyed it. Stan Romanek, the last show that we did with him, is what we broadcast last night. And a very fascinating, fascinating story from Stan. And so I hope you enjoyed that. But tonight, we're going to, as we take our journey into the world of the strange and the unexplained, dive into a total of six different stories, if we have time to get to all of these. A lot of weird stuff happening. And we'll spend most of our time probably on the last one. But, there's just a whole lot of things developing in this genre. And it's happening, lots and lots of big developments, but it's happening at a time when most folks in this genre have gone to sleep. As I predicted would happen, I predicted it on this show, I predicted it before December the 21st, and it's a prediction for what would be after December 21st, 2012. And then I've repeated it a couple of times. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll get back into that in just a moment. All of the music used here at The Kevin Smith Show is right, welcome back. Let me say to those of you who are listening on the radio or computer or any of your mobile devices, no problem at all. But for those who are watching our TV channel, that computer, as we went to break, rebooted itself. Now, we went through this before, and when we did, we went through all that before, it was after a big electrical storm, and that's the case this time, so I guess I'm going to have to do to it what I did before, which is wipe it all out and reinstall everything. I don't know. I really don't know what causes that. But the folks that were watching our TV channel, you will be back soon. I know you've switched over to the radio channel now, but the TV channel will be coming back up soon as that computer is rebooting and getting itself all back in order. Now, what we're going to do, I'm going to hit some pretty important stories tonight. And these are all within our genre. These are pretty big developments that are happening. But what's happened is all of these big, there's a whole bunch more of big developments. I just can't get to all of them in a show, in one show. But what's happened is all these big developments are taking place in an atmosphere where many, many, many people in our genre, you know, people who are into the paranormal or UFOs, extraterrestrials, all that whole genre, are asleep. Really, a great, great many are asleep. And those many of those who are not asleep are right at the edge of it, and it's a big yawn. Now, I predicted this would happen, okay? I said it would happen, and it has happened. I said it before December the 21st, 2012, and I have repeated it after December the 21st, 2012. And the prediction was this. There's a lot of real stuff going on, but everyone is diverted. Everyone is paying attention to December the 21st, 2012. They're distracted. By the way, for those who are watching the TV channel, it will come back on now, but what you will be seeing is not, it didn't pick up the camera, so it's got some problems. You'll still get to see the graphics, though. All right, so what I recommend is, you know, just if you're watching, just listen on the radio channel, and you can watch for the pictures and stuff on the TV channel. But there is no camera, so there's no shots of me, and that doesn't hurt the show at all. All right, so I said everybody's distracted by this December the 21st, and everybody's so keyed up about it and so you know, anxious about December the 21st, 2012. And I said, nothing's going to happen. Nothing. It's just going to be another day. No big deal. But, and this was the prediction, after it's over, after we get past December the 21st, 2012, you're going to see a shakeout in this genre. Now, some people interpreted that as, you know, a whole lot of shows were going to just suddenly disappear and all that, which is not what I said. And I'm only responsible for what I say, not for what you think you understand I say. Right? What I did say is there would be a shakeout, and there'd be a whole lot of people who would, you know, be like turning off the credibility and turning off their interest in a lot of these shows and these hosts who hyped it up for December the 21st, 2012. And that eventually there would be a bunch of these, especially the hobby jock shows, that would disappear. But for those that were not hobby jock shows, they would simply look for a new, oh my God, the sky is falling disaster, and start hyping it. That is exactly what has happened. That is precisely where we are right now. And for those that, you know, a lot of the hobby jock shows are fading away. People are, it's in a big yawn right now. And so what's happened is the ones that are not hobby jock shows, realizing that things are in this big yawn, have decided, well, we got to whip up some excitement. We got to get some, you know, build up the interest and get people really, really going on this stuff again, because, you know, we're losing audience and we're going to lose revenue and blah, blah, blah. And so they're just basically manufacturing stuff right out of the very, you know, their worst dreams of hell. And putting it out there, and oh my God, the sky is falling again. And so it's done exactly what I said would happen, what I said it would do. Now, we don't do that. I realize the audience is in a huge yawn worldwide. That's not really my problem. That's your problem if you're in a big yawn. Because, you see, real stuff is happening. Real stuff was happening while you were so distracted and wrapped up and keyed up and wound up on December the 21st, 2012. Real stuff was happening that you weren't paying attention to then. And real stuff is happening that you're not paying attention to now, if you're one of the owners. But the real stuff is what we're after. The real stuff is where we go on the show here. So what we're going to do is dive into some of these real things that are going on and show you. I'm going to demonstrate for you here this evening that important real things are going on. The first one probably will not seem to you to be all that important. But it is. It is truly important. It's the story of a lady named Chantel. Chantel is, it is said, is the most abducted. Now, we're talking about alien abductions. Okay, she is the most abducted person in the UK. Been abducted by aliens more than anybody else. At least that's what she says. First abduction took place in 1970. Now, you might be saying, well, okay, so why is that important? Well, it's important for a couple of reasons. It's important because they're doing a documentary in which she is featured. So this is going to get a lot of airplay, especially in the UK and in Europe. All right? So it's going to get a lot of airplay. And draws attention, of course, to the whole subject of UFOs, right? Now, that's got some value, and that's important all on its own. But what else is in the UK happening with UFOs? Well, the Ministry of Defense, MOD, has been releasing their UFO files. They're declassifying them and releasing them. Now, as you know, they closed down the UFO desk in the MOD, the area of the MOD that investigated UFO reports. They closed it down. I think it was 2009. in the, they've just released the last batch that cover the last 2 years of that whole thing with the, you know, the UFO desk at the MOD. They've just released that bunch of files. And there's a detailed explanation in there as to why they decided to close that desk, that job. In other words, they just eliminated that function at the MOD. And it was very, very interesting to read why they closed the UFO investigation desk. Do you know why? Well, because of two things. And this is where it gets important. UFO reports to the MOD UFO desk from the public, UFO reports were increasing rapidly. Lots and lots and lots of reports of UFOs. So they were increasing. And, according to the MOD, in 50 years of investigation into UFOs, they had not identified a single threat to the security of the UK. No military threat. Therefore, having the Ministry of Defense, which is military, continue to spend money on investigating these things, when there had never, ever been identified a single threat to the security of the nation, seemed to be a waste of money. And I agree. I actually agree. If you have determined that they are not a threat to the security of the nation, then at that point, the military, not necessarily the government entirely, but the military ought to get out of that business. And then, you know, one wonders, if these things were not a threat, then why were the reports classified in the first place? They investigate them, discover it's no threat, or, you know, they investigate it and decide that they've identified it as something, you know, earthly. Like, you know, just a, you know, it was a some kind, and you know, I mean, really identified it, not one of their bogus explanations, but identified it as some kind of a weather anomaly, or they've identified it as some type of experimental aircraft or whatever. They've identified it. It's no longer unidentified, and it's not a threat. So why would you classify that file? Now, see, I think that's an important question to ask, because we still have at least one and maybe more major governments playing, you know, cloak and dagger spooks with this stuff. That would be, of course, the United States of America still acting like it's some kind of big deal. The UK, of course, classified all of these reports and now declassified them and released them. Question: since you already knew they were not a threat, why did you classify them? What was your reasoning? What was your logic? What is your justification for keeping this information from the public? Well, I can think of only one answer, and it would really, I mean, that would be justifiable somewhat, and it really is not too justifiable, and that is that even though many of these UFO reports were identified through the investigation process, 5% of them were not and are still UFOs, officially to the military. To the MOD, unidentifieds, 5%. And there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of reports over the years. And now 5%, it comes down to 5% are genuine UFOs. Unidentified things in the air. Don't know what it is. And that is from the MOD. Now, if you take the position that there are no extraterrestrial craft, there are no flying saucers or UFOs, you take that position, then you got to come up with an explanation for the 5%. And there isn't one. So you can't take that position and be logical. You got 5% that you can't identify, right? All right. Now, if you take the position that it is somehow worthwhile to tell the public there are no extraterrestrials, and they don't exist, if you take that position, then evidence to the contrary you would want to classify and keep from the public. It seems to me that the classification of these, in the light of the fact that they never found a threat, indicates that they did hold that position. They did not want the public to know anything about the existence of extraterrestrials, and therefore kept it classified to keep that information from the public. Somewhere along the line, the UK decided it was not worth it. Just let the information out, let it go, it's just not worth it. Their statement does not deny the existence of extraterrestrials. Their statement says UFO reports were increasing, creating an increased demand upon our resources to investigate. And in 50 years of investigation, we have not found a single case that was a threat to the security of the nation. So it's just not worth it to us. They are no military threat. Okay, that's an admission. That, along with the fact that they're admitting 5% were unidentified, it's an admission of the reality. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of important things happening. Now, this is a big development. You know, you read the story, this thing about the MOD, you read the stories in the news, and you see them online, you kind of go, oh, well, yeah, okay, hum-hum. There's your big yawn. There you are, yawning, because in that story is huge facts. 5% are determined to still be, 5% of the UFO reports to the MOD UFO desk still determined to be unidentified. That's important. You know, the majority of the people in the world, their attitude towards that would be, oh, well, there are no UFOs. Well, you know, 95% of that stuff's been identified. Well, how many elephants does it take to prove elephants exist? One elephant, not 5% of them, one. So we're not talking about one report that's still identified. We're talking about 5% of thousands. 5% officially unidentified. But, second fact, 50 years of investigation have not turned up a single incident where it's a threat to the national security in the UK. So they're not saying they don't exist. They're saying 5% of them are unidentified. Don't know what they are. Two, they're not a threat to national security, whatever they are. Three, why were these reports ever classified once they had been identified? Why were they kept classified? The 95%. And I'm conjecturing that it's because they saw some value in keeping the public from even thinking that there are extraterrestrials. And when they gave up that nonsense, when they gave all that up, they decided to declassify the reports. They did not address the extraterrestrial issue and do not deny the existence of extraterrestrials, nor do they deny the existence of UFOs. Big news. Huge news. And at the same time, now you've got this Chantel who's going to be telling her story about alien abductions, and they're going to have some more people also talking about their experience with aliens in this documentary that's coming up in the UK. Among the last reports to the UFO desk was a lady who said she had been living with an extraterrestrial for the past couple of years in the UK. Now, you may think, well, that's just nuts. Really? Why? Why is that nuts? Because you haven't experienced it? Is that why? All right, let's move on and let's talk about, well, let's see. Actually, I think what I'm going to do here is I think I'm going to go to the story about the Voyager. And, you know, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, right? Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 have been for a long time headed out. And I think this is an important story. It's, in fact, I know it is. It's a very important story. And it's important because the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 are really ambitious space exploration projects. They're not exploring planets. They are exploring space itself. And so, you know, they're just headed out there. And they've been going now for, what, 30 years or so? And they've been, NASA's been saying, well, you know, they're almost to interstellar space. They're about to get out of the heliosphere and hit interstellar space. A few months ago, they were reporting, well, there's been some change in the data. We think it's just about to break through into interstellar space. Well, now they have determined, well, not quite, because there is this region or area of space within our heliosphere they did not even know existed. The Voyager 1 and 2 have broken through the area that they thought was all of the heliosphere into what? More heliosphere. they're calling it the heliosheath. And for those who are watching the TV channel, there's a picture of this heliosheath and where Voyager 1 and 2 are located now, and our solar system right there in the middle. And so it's, you know, it's important. The whole thing is important because it's an area of space that, or a condition, I guess you could say, in space that the scientist had no idea even existed. Now, obviously, they knew that distance existed. What they did not know is that you still have some weak influence of the heliosystem. Helios is our sun, of course. So you have the sun, and think of this. You can draw a circle around the sun, draw a little dot for the sun about the size of a small pencil eraser. Then draw a circle around it about the size of a tennis ball. Then draw around that an elongated circle about the size of a cantaloupe. So Voyager 1 has now left the tennis ball and is in the cantaloupe. Here is a case where, you know, you've heard me say all the time, if you add up everything that everybody on the face of the planet, who has ever lived on the planet, add up everything they know, it would be about the size of a pinhead in comparison to everything there is to know. And so sometimes, you know, I will make statements on the show about scientists, and I'll say things like, they don't know about this. That's a guess. This guy's guessing, but he's passing it off as knowledge. You've heard me say that, right? Well, here's a case right here, actually proving that this happens. Because you see, up until a few weeks ago, when the analysis of this, all this data was wrapped up until then, all the best science said, I'm talking about the learned, the PhDs, the experts, they said that past the tennis ball was interstellar space. Turns out not to be the case. They didn't know. And my point is, they couldn't know because they haven't been out there, nor have we ever sent anything out there. So they were guessing what was out there. But when Voyager got there and started sending data back, then they kind of went, oops, well, there's this cantaloupe, you see. There's this region of space that's still influenced by the Helios system, but it's close to interstellar space. It's real close to interstellar space, but it's not interstellar space. So there's a case where the experts have been talking as though they know when they don't. And it was a guess. It was just guessing. Now, I point this out. This is important information, and I point it out to you because I want you to see the evidence, the actual factual evidence, that I'm telling you the truth when I tell you these guys are guessing. Now, I don't disrespect education. I really don't. I have a good education, an excellent education. I don't disrespect it. I respect it enough to know where its boundaries are. I respect it enough not to turn it into a religion. And that's what a lot of these scientists have done. They've turned what they think they know into a religion. Here's proof that religion was wrong. There's a lot of things that scientists do know. But in comparison to what there is yet to know, they are massively, grossly ignorant compared to what there is yet to know. Now, speaking of things we know and things we do not yet know, closer to home than Voyager, much, much closer to home, is a planet called Mercury. All of the planets, including Pluto, and I know lots of people think Pluto's not a planet anymore, and my opinion of that is horse-pucking. So Pluto, I mean, that's the farthest one out that we know about. So even Pluto is much, much closer to us than Voyager 1 is. A lot closer. Voyager 1 is like 11 billion miles away. That's a long ways away. 11 billion. All right. All of the planets in our solar system are mysterious, and there are things about them and things on them that are anomalous, in some cases indicative that intelligent life either is there or has been there. And these are things that those same scientists whom I've just shown you were proven to be ignorant of this huge region of space. Those same scientists ridicule when you start saying there is evidence. Well, there is evidence. Let me ask you something. You walk into a room, any room, I don't care where it is, you walk into the room. The room is completely, totally empty. There's not a picture on the wall. There's not a stick of furniture. There is nothing in that room except an empty beer can. One empty beer can. Would it be difficult for you to look at that room, see that beer can, and say, somebody's been here? I mean, wouldn't you think it insane if somebody said, well, that's no indication that anybody's been here? In fact, that may just be the product of molds that have grown from the wood in the floor. Wouldn't you think that was nuts? Well, a whole lot of what we hear from NASA about what's on other planets and a lot of what we hear from the experts about what's on other planets is just as nutty as that. We're going to take a break. I'm going to show you some stuff on Mercury. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion of some really important stuff taking place in our genre. Now, as we went away for break, I was talking about, you know, I used the example. You walk into a room that is totally, completely empty, except for a beer can. Empty beer can. You would have absolutely no problem in stating or in knowing somebody's been here. So you see pictures, say, from the moon or Mars that show walls with doors, windows, things like that, big facilities, machinery, and they want to tell you, well, you know, geology does weird stuff. It does. It don't do that. Just like mold and stuff like that can grow in weird shapes, but it don't make a beer can. And, you know, I don't know how we let them get away with ridiculing us. It's them that's putting out the freaking insanity. Now, I showed you proof. You go look this up on the internet about Voyager 1. Proof. A whole new region of space, a region of our heliosphere they did not know existed. Didn't even know it existed. But they were experts on the heliosphere. Well, there's no crime in not knowing. The crime, if there is one, is in pretending you know when you're guessing. So, let's go and take a look a little bit here at Mercury. Well, first of all, NASA has announced that they are joining Italy and Japan in a mission to Mercury. Only two spacecraft have gone to Mercury. One of them, I forget what it was called, but it was the first one, Mariner, I guess, is what it was. And years and years ago, it flew by and took some shots, and we had some pictures, kind of Mercury. I mean, they weren't very good, but we had some pictures. And then in the 2000s, I forget the exact year, 2007 maybe, this messenger arrived. And so it got a whole lot of really good pictures. And it also, you know, surveyed, you know, the composition of the surface and the atmosphere and all that stuff. It found some amazing things. It found water ice on this planet where they said it is so close to the sun, it is baked all the time, there could not be life. But these are the guys who say you have to have water in order to have life. I keep telling you that's not true even on this planet. You have to have water to have life like us. But you don't have to have water to have life. There are things living on this planet that are allergic to water, and they're allergic to it. It'll kill them because it's got oxygen in it. They're allergic to oxygen. And those little organisms live right here on this planet, on good old Terra. But you see, these guys down there at NASA, these guys down there at NASA say you got to have water and you got to have oxygen in order to have life. Well, guess what? Mercury has water, which means there's oxygen or there could be no water. Water is H2O. O is oxygen. And so they found a trillion tons of ice. A lot. A whole lot of ice. On this planet that's way too close to the sun. It'll just bake you. Now, I've addressed this before. I've said you cannot have a sudden terminator for the temperature. Obviously, for there to be ice, you have to have freezing temperatures or below, right? Well, you couldn't just draw a circle around that and at the edge of that circle say, well, from there on it's 500 degrees. Can't do that. It doesn't work that way. You don't have an immediate terminator for the temperature. So you have the very freezing cold temperature where the ice is, and then you have a fade zone where that fades down or fades out, and you get to the hot temperature. In other words, as you move away from the center of that ice, you're moving towards warmer temperature. You get to the edge of the ice, you're not at 500 degrees, you're still at a temperate temperature for some distance. But as you travel into that distance, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. If you didn't have that, all the ice would melt. Well, in that zone, around the edges of that ice. They found with the satellite messenger that went over there these dark spots. And these dark spots are organic. They're organic compounds. Now, organic does not mean biological, but all biology uses organic compounds. And so they think there may be the possibility of some life on Mercury. That's big news, folks. Big news that passed right in front of the eyes of the yawners. And they just yawned. Okay. That's huge news. So when I read this, I decided, okay, well, let me go over there and take a look at Mercury and some of the pictures and see what I can find and see if I can see anything that looks to me like there's something growing there. I have to tell you, I did not find anything that looks like something's growing, but I did find, well, I found a big monolith. Yeah, really. A huge monolith. This monolith is, it's just a great big slab that's standing out there. And it's pretty clear. I mean, well, for those who are watching, I'll just enlarge that a little bit. Hang on, and I'll zoom in on that a little bit and let you see what we're talking about. It actually has almost a semi-curved shape, but it's a great big thing just standing out there on Mercury. And who built that? Well, there's your beer can, NASA. There's your beer can, and the question is, has somebody been there? Now, you may say that's nuts. But then, you know, look, it's kind of like that beer can. You walk into an empty room, and there's a beer can in this room. That's all that's in this room, right? So you walk in there, and it's very easy for anybody to look at that and say, well, somebody has been here. Someone's been here. How do I know that? Well, I know that because there's a beer can. Well, here's a monolith. This thing is very, very tall. Kind of standing up on the top of a cliff. And if you look at the top of it, you can see it is almost kind of semicircle. Now, if you get up close to your screen, those who are watching, get up close to your screen. Take a look at the surface of that thing. And you may say, well, that's just pixelation. Well, you know, you'll see there's some kind of pattern there. And you may say, well, that's just pixelation. Well, you know, maybe. But you see that red arrow? Let's follow that red arrow back to where it starts. And when we do, here's what we find. We're looking into a crater and we see that same pattern, and we can see it's not pixelation. It's blocks of something, it looks like. Now we're going to take a break. Come back, we'll show you some more stuff. To the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and my sincere sympathy to you for whatever kept you away from the first hour. My best wishes, hopes, and dreams that tragedy never affronts you again. So we're on Mercury tonight. We've been all over the universe, all over the solar system, actually, and beyond our solar system. We're on planet Mercury right now. And I've just shown a picture of a monolith, a big, big monolith on Mercury. But when you look at that picture, you might say, yeah, I don't know, but maybe that's not a beer can. Okay. I'm going to bring up another picture, and I'll describe it for you, for those who are listening. We're looking at a crater. This crater is not round. It is not hexagonal. Think of it like a really gigantic rectangular swimming pool. But the corners, all the corners, are slightly rounded so that it's not a sharp 90 degrees. Nevertheless, it is basically rectangular. The floor of this crater is really smooth, except over next to the far wall of the crater, there is another crater in the crater. It too is an oblong oblong rectangular thing with its corners rounded. Next to it, I don't know what that is. It's white. It looks, think of it this way. Think of an airplane. It's not an airplane. It's shaped kind of like it. Think of an airplane that has crashed nose first right down into the ground, buried its nose in the ground. Its wings are still sticking out on the surface. Its nose is in the ground. Its fuselage is stuck up in the air, but it's no longer straight. It's kind of curved and bent. And it's curved and bent, kind of like the spoon on a hand grenade, those of you who have been in the military. That's kind of what it looks like. All right, so let me ask everyone who's watching, look at that picture. Look at it long. Look at it hard. And what do you see? I'm betting you don't see the really important part here. I could be wrong. You might. You might see it. But I'm betting you don't. Look real close. What do you see? All right. Now, it's kind of difficult because this is black and white. And the whites are really white, the blacks are really black, and then there's a lot of gray in there. It's such sharp contrast. It's a little bit hard to see the detail. So I colorized it just to take some of the glare out. And now what do you see? You're looking at the same thing, but what do you see now? Anything? Well, I'm betting now you can see on the left side of that crater, and it's kind of this crater in the picture is kind of diagonal across our screen. So in the lower left-hand side of your screen, you see the bottom side of the crater, and right in the center of that bottom edge, there is a structure, and it's a weird-looking structure. In a way, folks, you've seen cartoon pictures of like a brontosaurus, right? Now, this does not look like a brontosaurus, and I'm not saying it is. But this structure has something of that kind of shape to it. However, now... Let me fix this so that that we can zoom in on it. All right, I'll keep describing this. Even when you see that shape in that lower left hand side, I bet you still don't see what's really the important thing here. I bet. Let's see. Let's zoom in now. All right, here we go. There it is. And this is manufactured. I can tell you this is manufactured. I don't know what it is, but you can see it's a very flat surface on the surface next to us. And the front of its neck, very flat surface, but its head area, if this was a brontosaurus, its head area is curved and it comes down, goes to its back, gets to its butt and curves down. But then, right at the back, instead of that long tail that a brontosaurus has, it's got, on either side of it, two appendages that swoop out, come up, and curve towards its head. Now, mold does some pretty cool things, but it doesn't make beer cans. And geology does some pretty cool things. It didn't do that. I am betting you it didn't do that. And there's another evidence that it didn't. What is that evidence? Let's pull back out. Now take a look at the overall picture. What do you see? Well, how about the alignment of that structure over on the edge of the crater with that thing I said looks like a crashed airplane in the center of the crater? You take the tail section of that crashed airplane, it lines up with the head of that structure or creature, statue, whatever that is. The head area lines up with the tail section on that crashed airplane. All right? And that line goes right between those two appendages at the back of that creature or structure. It's not a real live creature. But it's shaped like that, kind of. All right, so that alignment doesn't look accidental, does it? Well, that's because it is not. That alignment is not accidental. Now, I'm going to zoom in on that crashed airplane looking thing and let you see that, right, you know, it's like it's crashed, the wings are out there, and then the body section goes straight up, then bends over at an angle to the right, and then when you get back to where the tail would be, it goes straight up again, and there's a little top notch sitting up there on top of it. That top notch, that thing is aligned with the head on that structure at the edge of the crater. Is this some sort of sundial? Is this some sort of, you know, calendar like we see here on Earth? You know, you go to Stonehenge and it marks the winter and the solstices and the equinox. The same thing with Adam's calendar over in South Africa. Is this something like that? Whatever it is, I think it's kind of like a beer can. You know? I don't think geology did this. Everything else around there looks geological. This doesn't. This looks manufactured. It really, really does. And now, you know, I can't begin to tell you what these things are. I mean, there's no way I can tell you what they are. I can't tell you what they're used for. I can't tell you who built them. I can tell you they do appear to be constructed. And when we go back to the unzoomed picture, and it's colorized just a little bit, put a little color in there, just kind of a yellowish color to take some of that glare out. Now you can see them without the arrows that are pointing to things. And let's take a trip from the airplane type structure, crashed airplane. Let's take a trip from there over to the other structure. Notice we're going to move in a straight line diagonally across. And there we go. Now, this is on Mercury. As I said, you see a beer can sitting in an empty room where there's no furniture, there's no pictures, there's no sign that anybody has ever been there, ever. But there is an empty beer can. You would say, well, somebody's been here. But when we look at stuff like this on another planet, we see stuff like this. And we say, well, somebody's been there. Then the experts say, well, now, you know, don't be foolish about it. I mean, you got an overactive imagination. Wait a minute. Would you say I have an overactive imagination? I see a beer can in a room and I say somebody's been here. Would you say that's an overactive imagination? No. You'd say, well, that's kind of minimal observation, but yeah, it's right. Well, the same thing applies when you see stuff like this on another planet, folks. Somebody has been there. On Mercury. Somebody's been there. Who? I don't know. When? I have no idea. For what purpose? I don't know. And they built this. Why? No idea. Absolutely no idea. Nevertheless, it's a beer can. Somebody's been there. In my opinion. But the experts now, I love it because the experts are such experts about so many things, have just discovered a whole area of space in our heliosphere that they did not even know existed. Nothing wrong with that. It just proves that experts, speaking as experts, are most often guessing. They know some stuff and they guess the rest of it. And they guess most of what they spout about. So, these are huge stories. These are stories, however, that our genre seems to be just yawning about. Gigantic stories. Huge stuff happening in our genre. All around the world, big developments. And people in our genre are kind of going, oh, yeah, well, okay. 623-444-5889. If you're not asleep and if you're not yawning, 623-444-5889. If you're hooked on the sensationalists that populate the airwaves, then these are still yawners to you. But they all point to something very, very important. For instance, you have an increase, a big increase, in the UFO reports that came into the MOD UFO desk. Big, big increase as they were closing that desk. Part of the reason they closed it. You have a big increase, as I reported night before last, of UFO activity on the moon being reported by amateur astronomers with their telescopes and video cameras. Big increase. Big increase in UFO sightings in Canada. Big. We're not going back to the moon. They talk about going to Mars, and they don't even have a Volkswagen to get around the corner. They are going to join in this expedition over to Mercury, with Italy and Japan, but it'll be unmanned nevertheless. They think there may be life there. I don't know if there is life there, but there has been intelligent living beings on Mercury. And I showed you the picture that says why. It's not the only picture, it's just the only one I'm showing tonight. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I'm going to go with an extension of what I said last night.
Mm-hmm.
If the people are uninformed, a level 5 disaster could easily turn into a 10.
Uh-huh.
If they're informed, 5 could be a 5.
Uh-huh.
Or a little bit higher, a little bit lower.
Right.
If they're informed and prepared, the 5 could become a non-event.
Yeah.
Now, as to why the UK is opening their files and declassifying stuff,
uh-huh.
I'm going to posit this. In the beginning, they were going with the corporate, the military-industrial complex, and the United States government saying, all right, keep this stuff under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
But they finally got tired of it. They want to break free. Maybe they want to inform their people and help them prepare.
Traveling on planes, trains, cars, and boats.
Is that music coming from your place, or is that from my computers?
Dizziness, craziness, and vomiting.
Hello?
Just a second.
It must be coming from his place. With the weird computer glitches we've had the past couple of nights, I didn't know if it was him or moi. Okay. Well, Brent, while you work on whatever that is, you know, it's possible that they were tired of going with the military-industrial complex. However, UK is pretty much as military industrialized complex as the U.S. is. And I don't think that really, they spy on their people way more than happens here in the U.S. And what happens here in the U.S. is about equal to the Gestapo spying. So I don't think that's it. However, the costs were increasing in order to investigate all those UFO reports. And this is the Ministry of Defense who was saying there's never in 50 years been an incident investigated that had any significance to our security. And so we just don't think it's worth the money. I think it's a money thing more than anything else. And I don't know if Brent's still with us. You still there, Brent?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think that may be a major portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
However, my question is, if they say none of it, none of the identified stuff is a threat.
No, that's not what they said. They said no cases that they have investigated had been identified as a threat. 5% of those are still unidentified, but they were no threat.
They say they're unidentified.
Well, whatever, but I mean, there's still no threat.
Yeah, there's still no threat. I agree. Something kind of sticks in my craw about that. I don't know how to explain it.
All right. Well,
but,
as
to why a lot of people seem to be going ho-hum, I know of at least one case where the person just had family issues and he had to back out. He still listens and he's still interested. He's just taking a back seat for a while.
Well, and I'm not talking about just our listeners. I talked to, I had Marshall Masters on who talked about his audience, which is huge. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other people on. Walter Bosley has been on. Same thing, ho hum. I've talked with Robert Stanley. I've talked with I can't remember everybody, but I talk to people all the time. Every day I talk to people, and I talk to other hosts and authors, speakers, and they're all experiencing the whole homosphere right now.
Yeah.
And but it's exactly what I said would happen after December 21st, 2012. I said it before it, but I said it would happen after, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. You're right. I agree. I remember it.
Yeah. But this is huge, huge stuff here. And, I mean, like this stuff on Mercury, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's been there. I mean, but you saw the pictures, right?
Yeah.
It looked constructed
definite
to you?
Definite beer
can. Huh?
Definite beer can.
Definite beer can. It's not geology. Nope. Somebody's been there. And, you know, and they're saying... You know, they found this gigantic amount of ice. And as I said, you have to have a fade zone. You can't have an instant terminator for the temperature. You have to have a fade zone. If you don't, all the ice would melt.
You could have an instant termination zone. However, it would be artificially produced.
Well, if somebody's there, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think you do. I don't think you have an instant terminator. In other words, it's 400 degrees below zero, and you know 1 centimeter beyond that, it's 500 degrees Fahrenheit. No way. It couldn't happen like that. You have a fade zone, and in that fade zone, you could have life. You would have liquid water. You would have temperatures that just about any kind of earthbound, earth-type life could live in. And, you know, you could have life there right on Mercury.
You could have Club Med.
Maybe Club Merc.
Yeah, Club Merc.
Yeah. But somebody built that.
Mm-hmm.
And
that picture of the brontosaurus type thing.
Uh huh.
That edge between the light and the front of it and the side of it.
Uh huh.
That's too sharp. That's not rounded. That's too sharp.
I'm not sure. Oh, we look at the front and the side. That's a perfect 90 degree angle right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look at the front of it. Yeah, that's a structure. And in fact. You look at the head, and then it comes down to the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, come down the neck. Now, move back to your left just a little bit. This could be an archway over a doorway.
Let me switch screens real quick. Hang tight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had to close the video because it was a commercial type thing.
All right, so this could be an archway. Like over a door.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then it's leading back into and under that crater. All right, man, got to run. Got a freight taking over.
Okay, you take care.
All right, thanks. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and our telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Let me remind those of you who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you may call that number or you may use our flash message option. Those of you in the USA, does not work for you. You got to use a telephone. And the reason we provide that for people outside the USA and outside of Canada is because the international calls are pretty expensive from a lot of countries. And so we give that extra option so folks elsewhere in the world may participate in the conversation without it costing them an arm and a leg. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I'll tell you exactly why people are going ho-hum right now in this genre. It's because they've been played like a cheap violin.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, we can attack people or attract people through fear. Mm. You know, and one of the best ways to get people's attention is appeal to emotion. You know, you appeal to their emotion, and that's pretty much where they live and where they react to things is in the realm of their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk about world-ending events. You talk about things that are coming that are inescapable, utterly inescapable. You know, unless you keep listening to me, and I've got the secrets for you because I get them channeled to me every day.
Uh-huh.
You know, you appeal to people's emotions, and as it gets closer and closer to the day, it's like turning up a rheostat. You know, on some lights, or like an orchestra conductor standing in front of an orchestra. You know, you'll see him raise his hands and shake that baton, and the orchestra just gets louder and louder, and they crescendo and crescendo until, you know, it's just almost deafening, and then he can bring his hands down suddenly, and it's dead silence. You know, and you can take a rheostat on your lights and crank them up brighter and brighter and brighter, then push the button, they turn off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly what's been happening to people in their emotions in this genre.
Yep.
You know, and if only they realize they've been played like a cheap violin, maybe that would shock them out of their emotions and get them into the realm of the mind where they can start thinking. You know, instead of acting out of their emotions.
Well, now, that's true, but let me tell you, a lot of folks absolutely have it coming. And the reason they do is, I could go on the air and say, folks, I've channeled this information from Payne Allotimus, who's an extraterrestrial from the planet Hemorrhoid. And he says this, and I just tell them all this, and they'll believe it. Now look, if you choose to believe, you got it coming. You just have it coming.
Oh, I agree, Kevin. For there to be predators out there, there has to be prey.
Yeah.
You know, and the prey need the predator as much as the predator needs the prey. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, that's what that relationship is, prey and predator. And I dismiss them both.
Yeah.
Having said that, let me say that, you know, pushing all the emotion and the appeal to emotion, which is how you get through to the masses, pushing all that aside, let me say that all this data that's coming up, this information, I find more exciting than anything. For instance, let's look at that crater, that big crater that you're showing that's on Mercury, and as I look at that big curved device in the lower left corner of your picture that's on the edge of the crater, that reminds me a whole lot of the sight aperture on an automatic weapon, like an M16, you know, or a Heckler & Koch.
It does.
It's like a sight aperture. And now there's that long, narrow device that's obviously elevated up off the ground in the center of the crater that's perfectly aligned with it.
Uh-huh.
Now, I can apply a little bit of imagination to that, and this is imagination, but it's informed imagination. And I know that the way that sighting device is set up is how you would set up an energetic field to make something like a Stargate. And I can imagine that being as close to the sun as Mercury is, it's easy to absorb lots of energy directly from the sun into some kind of a flying device that could go straight into that energetic field and could traverse itself wherever it needed to go, anywhere interstellar or maybe even to other dimensions. You know, if there's a Stargate sitting there, you know, that and interestingly enough too, it just happens to be on the planet Mercury. And Mercury is, in mythology, who was Mercury? He was the messenger god.
Yeah.
You know, so for there to be a messenger, there has to be a message, there has to be a sender and a receiver, and that implies transportation. something has to go from the messenger to the receiver, and that's the message. And then, of course, in between the messenger and the message, there's all kinds of other things like static and molecules and you name it. But this, to me, looks like the planet Mercury was some, or might yet be, some civilization is using that as a transport point.
Man, I had not even thought of that. And are you looking at your screen?
I am.
All right. I'm zoomed in on what I said looks like a crashed airplane. Kind of. I'm going to move that over just a little bit. I have only just now noticed that next to the crashed airplane, you have that half-moon-shaped or quarter-moon-shaped, crescent-shaped white area.
Yes.
It's elevated off the ground as well. It may be a flying machine.
Now, that could be a flying machine, or it could be a launch pad. It could be like a sled, you know, a sled-like device, or something. We would call it a sled-like device, but their technology would obviously be better. But it could be that they would, what's the word I'm looking for, catapult or something right off of that thing. That might be a launch pad.
Maybe. Does it look elevated to you?
Oh, it's obviously elevated.
Uh-huh.
Obviously elevated. And here's something else I find interesting. In the middle of its shadow is a light spot, almost as if there's a there's a porthole or something in the side of the elevated thing that's catching the sun and reflecting white back at us.
Yeah.
There's a hole in that.
Yeah.
And it's letting some of the light through. So that's another thing that lends the idea or the necessity that the thing is manufactured.
Yeah.
You know, that's not nature. That's manufactured. You know, and of course everything else is applying critical thinking. And, you know, if I know that certain things work a certain way, then all you have to do is show me a picture of it and I can say, there it is. You know, here's a very strong possibility of what it's used for. Now, another thing that is very obvious in this, like the 300-pound gorilla in the room that nobody wants to look at, is obviously the sun isn't behaving the way science tells us it should. You know, if the sun's sitting there like a great big bonfire in space, then the closer you get to it, the hotter it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yet, there's ice on Mercury, and there's life forms on Mercury, and it looks like they can go places. So, and as you get, as you leave the Earth's surface, I know this, and you climb a mountain, it gets colder the higher you get.
Yeah.
In the mountain, that's a farther away from the surface of the Earth, and if you fly into outer space, it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're flying closer to the sun, why isn't it getting hotter? It's not getting hotter. But yet, as you move away from the Earth, the surface of Mars is heating up just like the Earth is.
The surface of all of the planets in the solar system are getting hotter and brighter, and this is one of the reasons. You know, I really, really took it on the chin hard back around 2006, 2007, when I was poo-pooing the whole thing with global warming. It's nonsense. What they were saying is we're causing it. Well, as far as I know, and as far as the official story goes, there aren't any humans, and therefore no human activity on these other planets. And they're undergoing global warming as well.
Exactly right. So, you know, the whole solar physics, the way the sun behaves, is nothing compared to what, in no way resembles what mainstream science is telling us.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to apply a little bit of extra logic to that, too, and think about things in a different light. You know, and that's one of the things I like about this show, Kevin, is, you know, I can't stand hearing that fear-mongering stuff come across, you know, the world ending and so on. You know, so what? If it is, then it's nothing I can do about it. So in the meantime, I might as well do something productive. And so, you know, you give us information like this that expands our knowledge base, our grammar, and it helps us do something that's way more important sometimes than learning new things, is unlearning the old. You got to unlearn the old and kick it out, get it out of the way, so that you can replace it with better information. You know, otherwise, you know, we're still on the flat earth.
Yeah. I would say this. I would describe it. I don't disagree with what you're saying at all, but I would describe it this way. Hopefully, what we're doing here and what we're helping people to be able to do on their own is not just throw the old out, but examine the old and discern from that examination how much of that is actual knowledge and how much of it is somebody guessing and selling books and making money.
Exactly.
Most of what they propose or what they purport to be actual knowledge, most of it is speculation and guessing.
And then we have to not be afraid to violate our own comfort zone by getting rid of the faulty information.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of it. You know, it's not going to hurt us to throw out the things, the preconceived ideas that we had. It doesn't hurt a bit.
Yeah. It'd be like, you know, some guy wearing, $1,000 suit with the rear end torn out, but he's just walking around, you know, in his $1,000 suit and no rear end in his pants. Well, you know what? He may have a $1,000 suit on the front, but it doesn't hurt to notice there's a hole at the back and to tell him, man, you got a hole in the back of your suit. So that's what we're doing with the information. It may be a $1,000 suit in some places, but where there's a hole, I think we do ourselves a disservice by pretending there's not a hole there. We do ourselves
Absolutely.
A huge disservice. And we need to see that hole. We need to point it out. We need to say, but wait a minute, there's a hole there.
Oh, and Kevin, I have an idea why the Ministry of Defense closed out their UFO desk.
Yeah.
Aside from the cost, you know, and yeah, it was costing more than they cared to spend on it. We can say that, but I would also tend to believe that the UFO activity right now is significant enough that they don't want the citizens of the UK to have a central place where they can report things and feel like or expect to get some kind of meaningful, significant feedback on it. You know, they just want the citizens of the UK to be on their own, you know.
All right, I got to step away for a break. Thanks for the call, Steve, and I'll address that when we come back. I think you're right. We'll be back, folks, in just a moment. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and quick response to what Steve had to say. He said they just didn't, they closed the UFO desk in the UK, the MOD did, because they just didn't want the citizens there to have like a central place to report everything where they would be expecting some sort of meaningful feedback. And there's probably a great deal of truth in that as well. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, where are you calling from?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jerome.
Hi. The thing I want to point out is, you know, we can speculate on all this stuff. I'm going to talk like the Pope in religion a little bit, but not, you know, speaking religion. What we need here are more whistleblowers. everybody's familiar with the case, you know, that's prominent in the United States.
Yeah, you're talking about Snowden.
This is the only way we're going to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
All the other stuff is either just speculation, and I mean, like your diagram with the crater and stuff. I see everything you're pointing out on it, but you know, you can draw a point from that tail of the airplane, if we call that point A, and you can put points all around that crater, B, C, D, E, F, at different areas, and any point between that two points is a straight line.
Well, that's true. So let's get rid of the whole idea that those are lined up. Now explain them. They're still manufactured.
Yeah, I agree that it is manufactured, and I'm not sure that I do feel that, you know, that the two points do bisect those two tails. I'm just calling them tails, but I don't think they're in a line. The main body of the dinosaur and the main body of the airplane are not in line. So you can speculate on whatever you want. But it's not until somebody actually in the know comes out and blows the whistle. And, you know,
well, that would tell us, okay, what that's, you know, if they come out and blow the whistle on this, then we know what it's for. Well, they don't have to blow any damn whistle for us to know somebody's been there. That's a beer can.
I see that, and I agree with you 100%. A beer can's a beer can.
Yeah.
And that means somebody was there.
Yeah.
And you know that, and I know that, and your listeners know that. But everybody else doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, just like the chemtrails, everybody knows that the chemtrails are there. Not everybody, but more people know about the chemtrails. And yet there's not a darn thing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And it won't be until some whistleblower comes out.
Yeah. Well, whistleblowers are an important, very important thing. And, you know, we have these laws that are supposed to protect whistleblowers. Well, here's the problem. You got a law that's going to protect a whistleblower. And then you got a guy like Snowden. And he's going to blow the whistle on activity that he believes is totally unconstitutional. But the very people that he has to go to blow that whistle have passed laws saying, well, this illegal activity is now going to be legal. We're going to say it's legal even though it's unconstitutional. So he goes to blow the whistle with them, they're going to put him in jail anyway. You see?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that's the problem. You're not going to get very many whistleblowers, even if they're protected.
No, you don't. So really, when someone blows the whistle, I'm more pro the person than against the person.
Well, I am generally speaking.
Yeah, generally. I don't want, you know, the submarine codes or something like that given away.
Right.
Just,
yeah.
Oh, also, one other point I wanted to make. The UK is saying there's no threat at all, 100% no threat, even though only 95% are identified, but 100% no threat. Did they ever have any missile silo codes, you know, launch codes initiated from, you know, UFOs, how we had in...
Yeah.
They have?
Yeah, Russia has had and we have had.
Yeah, we have had and Russia has had. I would say that's a big threat.
Yeah, but apparently that never happened in the UK, so...
So that what they're saying is true, then?
Well, I would assume so. No way to know, but I would assume that it's true.
And you know what? I see where more and more activity is going, and you and Steve believe that it, you know, this also gives the people less chance to organize. But I think it's more money also.
Yeah, I'm not real sure what all of the motives were, but I have no reason to doubt that money was a huge motive. However, it's interesting. You know, they're not even going to acknowledge that the question exists, nor will they ever answer the question. And that's this. If these UFOs, which you acknowledge, the MOD acknowledges 5% are unidentified flying objects, don't know what they are, can't identify them. Okay, if you acknowledge that these are not a threat, 50 years of investigation, they're not a threat, why did you have everything classified?
Well, I agree.
Then never answer
you know
that.
I think when they first started having them classified, it was just in a convenient cover-up. And then later on, as more and more video cameras and you know, stuff came up, it just got a harder lie to perpetuate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever the reason is, I'm glad they declassified them. Okay,
oh, sure.
Jerome, I got to run, buddy.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye. All right, we have a flash message here from John in the UK. And he says, hi, can I change the subject for a bit? Would disclosure be good for the economy? Can the UFO subject be turned into a billion-dollar industry? Oh, it could be turned into a zillion-dollar industry. But, see, that's part of the problem. John, the economy of the world is in the hands of a very few families. And until they can own the UFO technology, until they can own a way to charge you for it, you ain't gonna get it. They are why there is no disclosure. They are the ones who own the governments of the world. Make no mistake about it. Anybody who is at the top of a government is not in charge. If they're at the top of a government, these families are in charge of them. And they will do or not do based on what they are instructed from those families. And if they decide they are going to buck that and they are going to go against it for the good of the people, they get John Kennedy'd. That's what he was about to do. And bang, he was gone. That's what happens to people who think, for instance, well, I'm the president and I can do this. If it goes against these families that own the economy of the world, those families will show him he can't do it. He's not going to get away with it. And it's happened more than once. And so that's the problem. But it could be. It could be, John. Thanks for the flash message. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.